Sean, what company are you with again?
Classcraft. I'm CEO of Classcraft.
Oh my gosh. We need to talk, bro.
Well, that's what we're doing.
This is the Meteor Club Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about all things Meteor.
Hello, Meteor JS Club fans. This is the Meteor JS Club podcast with me, Ben Strahan, and my co-host, Josh Owens.
Hey. Nice. It's weird.
Yes. And today we got Sean Young with us from Classcraft. Yo, what's up, Sean?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. You did a Q&A a while back, Meteor Club Q&A, but today, what I wanted to talk about was Galaxy. Like, you, as far as I know, you're maybe the second biggest, at least publicly declared, Meteor setup. You know, we were tweeting back and forth with Mixmax and you and myself and trying to figure out like who was hosting where and how many peak connections and stuff. And then you said, oh, we're on Galaxy. And so I thought it would be fun to talk about that experience going from Amazon to Galaxy and maybe even just comparing and contrasting. Like, I've done MUP, I've done MUPX, you know, I do those on DigitalOcean. I've done Heroku, I've done Modulus. So I'm kind of curious, like, the one thing I haven't tried is Galaxy, and that maybe that's a pricing issue right now. Hopefully that'll get better, but for smaller developers anyway. Why don't you tell people what Classcraft is real quick?
So Classcraft is a role-playing game for the classroom. Basically transforms any classroom into a giant role-playing game. So kids play as warriors, heroes, and mages, and then based on their behavior, they can get powers like being able to hand an assignment a day late, get a hint on an exam. So basically it runs all day during class, and as things happen in class, the teachers give points to the kids, and the kids can log in and like customize their avatars and stuff. So in terms of traffic and that kind of stuff, it's pretty interesting because the usage is somewhat... Well, I guess other apps would have that kind of usage, but it's somewhat atypical because there's a lot of activity from, you know, a teacher and their students for, you know, so that's 30 users for an hour, a lot going on, a lot of back and forth, users writing on, you know, all kinds of collections, and then it just dies down. So like we have very strong peaks during the day and during the week. You know, weekend is very slow, but then like during the week we'll get some, you know. This week we went up to 10,000 concurrent connections at once. In terms of users now, we're now at 425,000 users. We're in 75 countries. We also have an iOS app native and an Android app native that we made our own DDP library for Android, and we use an existing one off of GitHub for iOS, but we didn't go the Cordova route.
Well, but you guys started before the Cordova support was even there, right?
Yeah. You guys are pretty young.
We started developing on Meteor in November 2013. So I think Meteor was like a 0.5 then. We had to build a lot of things that we needed that weren't in Meteor and that now are part of Meteor. So we have a bit of a... We're actually doing some of that work right now of like going back and through the old code and updating it with, you know, more... up-to-date Meteor practices.
Yeah.
Like things like, you know, template level subscriptions and that kind of stuff that weren't there out of the box, you know, a year and a half ago, but that are now, you know, common practice.
Yeah. I worked on Words with Friends for a little while, like trying to help scale their backend, and they had a similar kind of pattern that you mentioned. Like there would just be this sudden crush of people that would come in and use the app. Oddly, it was like right at 7 o'clock Eastern time. So right, I think after people would finish dinner, they just felt like playing a Scrabble-esque game on their device. And it would die down around 9 o'clock. So I guess people got tired and moved on. It must have been an East Coast thing. I don't know. Very bizarre. So yeah, I know that like that can be kind of difficult to deal with. And there were a lot of strategies that we were trying to implement. They had like 27 app servers and Memcache in place to try to speed things up. And I mean, it was a really interesting project to work on. What kinds of things have you guys had to do to kind of support and scale out so far?
One of the things that we're now in Galaxy, as you mentioned, but earlier before that, we were on just on EC2 on Amazon, and we were, you know, obviously like a single thread app with that kind of traffic just doesn't work. So we started using Passenger, and we used that for like a year. And Passenger's good, but it's very, you know, Ruby centric. And so in terms of certain things we needed, like it started crushing like under the load. Like for example, the load balancing was not amazing for specifically for Meteor because, you know, it didn't handle sticky sessions across restarts. It didn't, you know, if you have the enterprise version of Passenger, you can get rolling restarts, but they didn't, you know, when you deploy and stuff. But just in terms of load balancing, sticky sessions, there was a real like ongoing issue for us there. So that was a bit of a thing. We also had, you know, we learned a lot about optimizing queries and publishes. There's a lot that can be done at the app level just to make that happen in a much better way. Like we're, you know, we're talking about like architecture and hardware here, but there's definitely a lot that you can do in your app code to just
very true
go better. Unfortunately, I feel like it's undocumented on the web. We're a pretty small team, so I'm a little I'm going to bow my head in shame here, but we haven't you know, blogged about any of the stuff we're doing, which we should definitely be.
Yeah, well, I've
forward, but we just haven't had the time.
Yeah, I've blogged about some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and your articles are great, honestly.
Oh, thanks. the big thing is like most people miss indexing, or they don't realize like another thing that can get kind of painful is if you don't. If there's not like a one-to-one relationship between the data you're pulling in and the view that you're creating, like that can become pretty painful pretty fast.
Yep.
Or like aggregating, like if you want a bunch of data that's being pulled from a different collection and you're somehow counting it or reporting on it, like that could be super painful as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of that going on.
I would imagine.
Yeah. As we've transitioned to Galaxy, one of our big focuses has been, you know, squashing memory leaks. We just developed so fast that we didn't have time to, you know, I guess we have a bit of a technological debt there in terms of you build a bunch of features, you test it a little bit, and then you move on to the next one. It's so easy with Meteor, right?
Right. Right.
But I think now we're like, we're going back through some of the code and like, okay, you know, we identified and fixed publishers that had, you know, never closed, that kind of stuff. I mean, we had observers within observers, like really complex things, and so we've really I think it's going to be a common problem for people as it, like our experience, like as you grow and you develop things so easily, it's very easy to just forget about optimizing everything.
Yeah,
and it gets pretty heavy, well, fast just with all the observers and, you know.
And if you got the money, then it's easier sometimes to just throw more money at it.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah. So I remember like Sir Charles Watson was talking in the Meteor Club Slack channel and telling us like their startup just had enough money. And so they were doing something like 30 people per server, mm-hmm. and they needed to get up to 3,000. So they just like spun up a bunch of servers just to deal with it rather than trying to
make it rain.
Yeah. To me, like I've always been optimize it. Like I like to optimize at the right time, but I don't know. I definitely look at it pretty quick for me anyway. Like, oh, we just had a terrible experience. Like the client launched the Cordova app that we've been working on, and they didn't turn on OpLog on the Mongo database. Mm. And, like there was some red tape around like getting that set up and deployed and stuff because it's all internal servers and stuff. And they have like change requests they have to do. It's pretty crazy. But right. Like that was amazing to me. Like even with like 15 people on the app through a phone, like that was starting to drag down the server. Mm-hmm. And you know, you put OpLog in there and it's like it drops down to like 2-4% on CPU usage, and like all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, this app is so fast. And I'm like, I told you guys. How has that been for you guys, like hosting your Mongo stuff?
We hacked OpLog out of the gate with Meteor Hacks. They have a Aaron Noda built a like OpLog hack back in the day.
Yeah,
and so we had that at the beginning, and then when Meteor, I think it was 0.7, put out OpLog. We just switched to that, and that was fine. I think like our main issues have not, in terms of like performance, have not really been around database. listening, other than indexing properly. Indexing in Mongo is a real science. Because you know,
indexing any database is probably a science.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's, I guess you're right. Because Mongo is so flexible, you're always coming up with new queries, and like it's easy to just forget an index. And so.
Well, and to be fair, you know, Postgres and MySQL have been around for many, many more years. Mm. So there's a lot more documentation on the web and elsewhere to kind of help with that.
True, true. And to speak to that, I think one of the challenges for people, you know, going into Mongo, for example, it's just there's the lack of conclusive tests. Like we're like, oh, well, would it be better to index this in this order or index this? And it's like, well, we don't know because, you know, you have to run your own load tests because there's no benchmarks out there that are that clear about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Explain will tell you that it should be better, but that doesn't mean that like it will be better.
Yeah. I mean, Explain is great and we've had, you know, we've been using it obviously to, you know, debug that stuff. But like once you get into production, the development environment and the production environment are two different beasts,
yeah.
As you know. So sometimes you're like, yeah, okay. And I think there has yet to emerge like a really clear set of best practices and like a consensus on the web about you know how you should be handling some of these issues. Mm. I think that as we go forward, you know, it happens really fast. I think in the like next few years, there'll probably be a lot more resources there for people who want to develop on Mongo, but it was a little really annoying to have to build our own, you know, benchmarks and stuff to just be clear on what the right practice was. But
why did you guys choose to like build your own Mongo databases rather than going with like Compose or MongoLab?
Amazon and they had an instance when they don't have it anymore. Actually, that was a surprise to us. But back in the day, Amazon had a like instance like already set up with Mongo. So we just, you know, picked that one off. You know, now Compose is amazing. We're using it on our staging server, has really low, like if you don't have huge traffic, Compose is really cheap. It's like $20 a month or something for a database.
Right.
And we felt that, you know, we could have moved our production database server over to Compose, but the stats were a little different from what we needed. They scale up memory with storage space, but really mm-hmm. we need more memory mm-hmm. proportionally to storage space. Like I think it composes like it's something like for every gig you get 10 meg of RAM or something like that.
Right. They got like a simplified scaling structure.
Yeah.
But it's not so much ideal in like your case. I think MongoLab has something more unique then where you get like a VPS going mm-hmm. by the RAM that you need.
And it just didn't exist when we were there at the beginning, I think.
So, I mean, that probably means you guys built up a little expertise internally on how to set up Mongo replicas and back those up and restore them and that kind of stuff. Like, to me, that's the big advantage of Compose. Like, is that true? Like, do you guys have that on your team?
We're using Mongo MMS for that, which is, just handles it right out of the box. It just replicates over to their thing and you can... you know, roll back to any point in time. And that's
like free for 10 nodes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Super, nice. Super affordable. And we've had great success with that. Actually, we didn't even consider that a factor in moving over to Compose. And it's really good. I mean, and Mongo MMS now has their own, they actually host Mongo instances as well. I guess their service is similar to Compose. We didn't really look into it, but that's another possible option that we looked at.
That's interesting. I'll have to take a look at that.
So tell us about your experience with Galaxy so far.
Yeah.
MDG and like the transition.
The transition was actually pretty smooth. I think for us, we had a few server-side libraries that, you know, one of them is we have Image Magic for...
Yes.
And so I think a lot of people use Image Magic. Well, anyways, we had it on ours. They didn't have it. They were really cool about installing it. I think they just stuck it on everybody. Honestly,
that's great.
I don't know, but they definitely did it for us.
I maintain the package, OK Grow Image Upload, which depends on that. And we were like, well, Galaxy is a no-go for us because we need Image Magic.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have it. Oh, I mean, we have it on our node, on our containers. Yeah. But I think Image Magic is like a no-brainer. Like,
yeah,
anytime you want to do anything with images, you know, Image Magic is a go-to solution. They were really cool about installing it right away. So I think that it's awesome. Just, my feeling is they saw the value there. Another one we had was WK HTML to PDF for just generating PDFs.
Yeah.
And so they did like a hackish thing for us and installed it on our containers as well. And it works finally, but I think we're going to transition away from that anyways. We just found other solutions finally, but so anyways, they were, I don't know if they're like that with everybody, but for us, because we were part of the, you know, initial testing phase, they were really helpful about, you know, meeting us where we were in terms of our architecture.
Yeah. That's cool. I'm about to find out.
Amazing.
Because we won the hackathon. So I got my free,
oh, you won the hackathon.
What my free Galaxy subscription.
That's amazing. What did you build?
We built REST to DDP. So it's like a service. You put in a REST endpoint. We just spit out a nonstop DDP feed for you guys. So now all REST endpoints become real time.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is that available on GitHub?
It is. You can actually use the service right now and you just use DDP Connect in your app and boom, it's working.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is, it was very cool.
API in the next few months. So it's interesting to me.
Nice. Yeah, it's actually pretty awesome. I think the one thing you guys should add, though, if you're taking feature requests, is the ability to, like, so if I want to do Twitter feeds or something, or Twitter API calls, like, how can I securely pass, like, an OAuth token back and forth so you guys can make those requests on my behalf?
Oh, you just pass it through the subscription. And you do it on your server, though.
Yeah, but you probably need some way to like encrypt it or something, or some kind of SSL turned on or something, because you don't want to necessarily just pass that data straight over.
Yeah, yeah. Right now it's hosted on the Meteor free hosting. So
yeah.
Yeah, but we got parameters in it, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys did an awesome job. Now that you're on Galaxy, I don't know how many servers you were before. I mean,
what we had before was we had one humongous server. We were at the highest tier of EC2. We'd just been scaling vertically, you know, as we got more and more users, and we were ready to start scaling horizontally. And so for us, moving to Galaxy was amazing because we didn't have to do that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Were you looking at like Meteor Hack clusters before that?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. We were just on the cusp of doing that. It was interesting because we had two issues. One was that scaling issue that we had to figure out, you know, whether or not how we were going to scale. And then because, you know, using Passenger, it's like Nginx and stuff. So, you know, it kind of handles that pretty well, but still like there's still like some config that has to happen there. And then our other problem was load balancing across processes. So we had this large server, but it really had 60 running processes of the app all on the same server.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two per core or something. And basically, Passenger was load balancing to the processes. So in the same way as if you had a cluster of little servers and it was load balancing the servers, we were actually doing that same kind of process, but on the processes on the server, because with Meteor you really want to have sticky sessions. You want to make sure that if a user, you know, has always comes back to the same process to keep up that real time, you know, simulation. Because of that, we had issues load balancing to the processes, because what it would do is you would fire up the app, you know, after deploy, and then it would put everybody, it would, you know, spin off processes. So by the time there was like five processes done, it would put everybody that's trying to connect in those five. And then all the other processes would be empty.
Mm.
So we'd have, you know, like, I don't know, 3,000 people in five processes when we really had 60. So then we had to like manually kill the processes because, you know,
yeah.
It was just, so anyway, it was a whole like sessions issue that was not cool.
Yeah.
And that we were basically handling kind of semi-manually.
Meteor itself already has a little bit of a problem with restarting in the first place, just because you get this like swarm of people coming in and reconnecting and getting publication data for like login and like anything else that they need. Mm-hmm. And it just like kind of kills the Mongo server for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden everything gets back to normal.
Yeah.
So I've got to imagine that's like even worse, kind of compressing all of those people into 5 instances instead of 60.
Yeah, it's just like horrible. I mean, the database would just go like for, you know, and we have our database servers like the load is typically like, I don't know, like 5%, 6%. Like we haven't had any, I guess we threw money at that problem as well, I guess. We just kind of overscaled the DB and it's just been doing really good since the beginning. And that's what's really great about Galaxy. So there's a few really, you know, clutch points that Galaxy solved for us there. The first one is obviously the scaling problem. You can just spin off containers as you need them. So let's say you have, you know, 10 containers and then you need another one, then you just, you know, up press plus and you'll get another one. And it'll handle, you know, routing traffic to that container. It'll handle, you know, deploying the app on it and everything. So it's just out of the box. Very Heroku style, you know, with dynos type of thing.
Yeah.
So then scaling doesn't become, like, technically is not an issue.
Right.
Which is very interesting. I mean, we don't have a very, you know, our team is very product focused. You know, we did our best to do all that sysadmin stuff and, you know, and we did well, but it was definitely a drain on our resources. So it kind of just takes that whole scaling aspect out of the thing. And then to your point, Josh, about the database and when you, you know, deploy your app, and Galaxy has rollouts. So if you, let's say you have 20 containers again and you deploy the app, it'll spin a new one up, migrate everybody over to it, and then close it. And then it'll do that 20 times. So the database, like the oplog in the database, never actually gets slammed with people reconnecting all at once. Does it in a very like staggered way. And so a deploy can take, you know, anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes of depending on how many containers you have, but you're making sure that at no given time is there like a big jam on your database. So I feel like they really solved that issue. And they also solved the, like, they have their own proxy. So they solved the like load balancing issue as well. For us anyways, like we're seeing like a very evenly distributed amount of clients per container.
That's interesting. I thought they were just using Elastic Load Balancer. You think they have something else in there too?
I know they made their own. They had issues with our custom DDP protocol on Android, and they made some tweaks to it.
I think Matt goes into it in
the video.
Yeah,
I'll have to watch that then. I'm kind of curious about that because I feel like if it was just ELB, like there's not much difference between Elastic Load Balancer and HAProxy, and I think HAProxy could probably do a good enough job to help, but. You know, you're right. If they're doing something to watch the connections and like transfer the people over to that newly spun up server, like that's actually quite cool. I think you're right. Like that would be a huge help with this problem because you can, for the most part, as long as you don't have a data migration, you should be able to just, you know, do that kind of rolling restart type of scenario, zero downtime. So.
They really handle that out of the box. It's been we were doing it manually. So our deploy, another thing most developers would be happy with, I think, is how easy it is to deploy. You know, it's just a single line command line from the terminal. We had that set up ourselves. We built our own custom deploy script with Capistrano, which is a Ruby tool, but you know, you use what you can. You know, so we were handling our own like deploy process in one line. Yeah. And then we would log in SSH and like manually load balance the processes until everybody was like well load balanced. So they definitely do that. It definitely does all that right out of the box. So that's really helpful as well. While we most of the time that we've been that we were in the like test phase, their UI wasn't like they have like a UI where you can like monitor your app and. It wasn't built, but they finished a V1 of it before they launched. And it's actually pretty helpful. You get like, you can see how many people are connected on each container at any given time. You can see what the CPU usage looks like, what the memory usage looks like, and then you get error logs in the web panel as well.
Hmm.
So there's like a tail constantly going on there. They told me that they're definitely going to be putting more energy into that panel, like making it, you know, more complete in terms of being able to monitor. But right now there's still like a fair, I guess the same type of like basic tools you would expect from being able to SSH and, you know, doing HTOP or whatever, and just kind of be seeing what's going on with your server. So
it sounds like you're like pretty happy with it. And that's pretty amazing for like a version one.
Yeah.
It was like pretty ambitious goal, and it sounds like they're really kicking ass and doing it.
I mean, they've been super responsive. Like the guys from Percolate joined our Slack team for a while, and they were, you know, going back and forth, and they were trying to make sure that, you know, we were having a good experience. So, but yeah, we're pretty happy. I mean, I don't see it like we were like, okay, we'll jump on board and, you know, just put all our eggs in one basket here.
Yeah.
And I don't see us moving away from that short term. Like, it's just been really...
Well, I don't know that you've necessarily put all your eggs in one basket, right? Like, your Mongo's still elsewhere and you're controlling that. And
yeah,
if for some reason you had to leave, I don't know that it would be too painful.
No, we could roll back our instance that we already had on Amazon and, you know, redeploy on there. And
one of the interesting things to me, like a lot of people got up in arms like, oh, it's $500. This is ridiculous. One of the things that they did, and one of the reasons they put that so high, is to keep the bar high and only get a few businesses in and start to build their support team. Have you had to utilize the support maybe since it's launched? And, you know, what's that SLA? How's that working out for you and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, we did. I mean, we went back and forth. I helped debug them a little bit on the UI. We were having UI issues on their UI, and we went back and forth. They've been really responsive, honestly. I think they're working pretty hard over there. But yeah, I think that they've been generally very helpful in trying to, you know, they even helped us with like things that had nothing to do with Galaxy that were just related to memory in our app.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't know how they, you know, that definitely doesn't scale, but I think like just in general, they've been very responsive when we submitted tickets, and like they had a little bit of downtime at the very beginning, and like they were super quick to react to that as well. So far they've been, you know, very good in that sense, but I mean, that was in the days when we were, you know, I don't know, 5 or 10 companies on it. So I don't know how they're doing now.
How is the pricing compared to what you were paying Amazon before?
It's pretty similar, honestly.
That's awesome.
I mean, if you go on the like enterprise tier that's not there, that's what we're on. You know, you can get a little bit more creative, maybe. We definitely, you know, and if you pay up front for the year, they probably do some deals there too as well.
Yeah,
you know, same way as Amazon would. I think for the volume that we were having, it made sense. It's not a crazy price difference. And actually the difference that we're saving it in dev hours, honestly.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't have to do.
Sam Hatoum made that point in the forums when people were talking about the pricing. Like, he's like, you know, honestly, I'm spending $200 now, and I have to do a bunch of work. And like, I tend to agree with him, like trying to learn Docker and deploying Crater on DigitalOcean. Like, I can literally point to probably 5 to 10 hours of billable time that I lost just playing with that stuff. So, I mean, that's like real cost to me and my family. So, I mean, that's pretty legitimate.
Well, and as you scale, like those server issues are things that can kill your business, right?
Yeah.
If you're having a lot of downtime, or you have to, you know, put your whole servers down, you know, once a month to do maintenance or whatever, like those are things that could be really harmful to you. And they're things that you're, you know, you're not building features. So for us, it was like, it's not crazy expensive compared to what we were paying. We were probably not on the cheapest strategy as either. Like, we were on EC2. We could have probably, you know, moved over to something more less elastic and cheaper. But then at the same time, you're not, you know, wasting that time, you know.
Yeah.
So on, you know, you have limited tens of hours a month or whatever, from 30 yeah. hours a month or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Scaling is not a problem you worry about at this point in your business anyway.
Yeah.
Definitely. Scaling the team, that's what you worry about.
Yeah. Scaling exactly. the team, yeah. product market fit, making income. Those are the things that matter. So I'm curious, like you said you were on a fairly large instance and doing about 60 processes. Do you remember what kind of instance that was at EC2? And then how many containers are you doing now? Do you know?
I think we're a little bit overkill. Honestly, we did a bit of throwing money at the problem. We definitely had some memory leaks, you know, which we've solved a lot. We're still, you know, optimizing. And so I think right now we have more than we would need. But we were at the second to last tier in terms of C3 on Amazon.
Okay. So it's like 16 CPUs and 30 gigs of memory?
Yeah. And then at the end, we had a huge spike.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Back to school, like for us, August is like, we like doubled the number of users in the last like month and a half.
It's Christmas.
Christmas in August. So we at the very end, we moved up to an 8x large, which is the final tier on C3. And so so that's, you know, 32 virtual CPUs. I've got it up here and, you know. So we had two processes for each CPU, so that was like 64. And now on Galaxy, we have like 50 containers, which is definitely overkill. But, I mean, we're still growing super fast, so it's just like we did a deal. Like we paid up front for the year, and it's just like, great, we have this amount, and we won't have to worry about it. But I think we could definitely have gone down to like, you know, once it's all perfectly... perfectly as perfect as that can get, well optimized, you know, I think we it would be feasible to scale back down to, you know, 20 or 30. So like I think like we're I feel like that. Yeah, sure. The market that we're in is very critical. And teachers need tech to work really fast all the time, otherwise they look like idiots in front of 30 kids.
Yes.
So there's a real pressure there for it to work properly. So for us, it was just like, you know, we'll just throw money at that issue. And, you know, there's a limit to that, obviously, but we'll just make sure that, you know, everything just chugged along just perfectly smoothly. And then we'll, which it is, and then we'll readjust next year if we need to scale back down. But I think right now it was just, for us, it was just like, let's just fix it now. But I think, you know, normal projects wouldn't need that much. Like, I think they're like $1,000. 20 containers offering is load sufficient for most, you know, smaller startup cool. people type things.
Yeah. To me, the hard part of scaling a Meteor app is dealing with a high write load. Are you guys dealing with the high write load? Because I feel like what they've done with Galaxy wouldn't really necessarily easily address that, because they're not offering anything for the database. They're just scaling horizontally, which, I mean, with Oplog, you're going to hit a point where the write load pushes so much data into each app instance that they're all just consuming a lot of CPU trying to process the real-time data. Like, have you guys had to deal with that at all? And like, what's been your strategy so far?
It hasn't really been an issue. We do have a lot of writes. I mean, every time anything happens in the game, it, you know, it generates like a whole bunch of other, you know, rights on players, on users, on, you know, we have a log of everything that happens in the game, you know, all the game events. So there's a lot going on there. For us, it hasn't been a big issue. I mean, the containers typically chug around at like 400 meg of memory out of a gig. So like, we're not feeling it. Like, they're not topped in any way right now.
Yeah.
And it's in the CPUs. I mean, they're using the CPU, the Amazon CPU unit, ECU, which is like a relative unit. You know, we get spikes and stuff when, you know, people create lots of classes and stuff, but like typically it's not been a huge issue. That's a good question. I don't know how they plan on handling that.
Are you on the current Meteor deployment? Was it 1.202?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. So you got that fallback on Poland Dev.
Mm-hmm.
That came in with 1.1, I think, actually.
Yeah, it did. It came in earlier.
Yeah, outlog, back pressure. Like, I invited Brad, a vocal, on here, too, from Mixmax, and I wish he'd come on, because they were the reason that we have the back pressure switch in the first place, because they were just dealing with a huge influx of writes from Google itself. And I think they're at about double the peak concurrent connections you guys are. And, you know, he's kind of worried about how to scale.
Well, they were when we talked on Twitter. Now it's actually gone way up.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing is, like, he was saying, like, how does anyone know an expert that would know how to get us to like 50,000 concurrent connections? And I'm like, so I emailed him. I'm like,
nobody's no
person exists. Yeah. Like, you're going to be building that person for the rest of us. But, you know, I asked him how he came out with that number, and he's like, well, we're on this like steady growth trajectory where, you know, we're going to be adding, and like at the end of maybe 6 months to a year, like they're going to be looking at that number. And I'm like, that's crazy.
I think it's something that Meteor as a community is going to address. We're going to have to address. I think, you know, it's still early days for Meteor in terms of production. I think. Mm-hmm. You know, there's more and more amazing things that are getting built all the time. But like, as some of these projects scale to a crazy number, those are going to be real issues. And I think that in my mind, MDG is going to be pretty proactive about it. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, those scaling issues are issues with their business model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like what they're selling right now with Galaxy is, you know, enterprise solutions.
Yeah.
So if they can't, if Meteor can't scale for the enterprise, then, you know, they have a huge issue.
Right. They're like raising a flag saying, trust us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With your critical software.
So. If I look at the development of Meteor over the last year and a half, like there's been steady ongoing progress in terms of optimizing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like most of the releases that came, you know, from 0.7 to 1.2 were mostly about that. Even you look at like the core of how Meteor is built, and it hasn't changed that much, but what's changed a lot is, like, you know, Blaze rendering, Oplog support, you know, all these new memory optimizations that they put out with 1.2. Like, I think that they're very focused on that. So
yeah,
maybe I'm optimistic, but I think that there's going to be solutions for those issues. I mean, there's always creative people, you know, like Aaronota over at Meteor Hacks trying to, you know, do all kinds of stuff to, you know, caching, and, you know, there's the fast render package that kind of,
yeah, he's pushing the envelope.
But, yeah.
I mean, that's what I like about this community. 'Cause like if MDG doesn't do it, someone else does it, and then get eyes on it, and just brings attention to a different aspect of scaling. And it's great. Like, and then we just keep on moving. The community keeps on going.
Yeah.
One thing that we are addressing now or starting to explore with scaling is microservices. And with Galaxy, like, you just got one big app, right? And you don't have control over those containers. You're just like hitting the plus and your app is just scaling.
That's it. Yeah.
With that. So you
put up a lot of control. It was a little bit destabilizing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so like breaking out to microservices, you would have to like get a whole nother subscription to Galaxy pretty much. Mm. Right.
What do you mean?
Well, I think what Ben's asking is, can you deploy more than one app to your containers? Like, say I want to put five containers over here on this app and five over here on this app.
Yeah, you can have, like, right now we have a staging app.
And I had the wrong assumption.
Yeah. No, you can deploy as many apps as you want to your container base.
I'm even more excited now that I'm a Galaxy member.
Well, it's pretty cool because, you know, like if really only all you need is like five containers, then you could host four apps, you know, on Galaxy and just go that route. So it's, you know, I think that as that price point then becomes more interesting for all people, because like if you're somebody with clients like Josh was talking about, well, you could, you know, host three or four or five of your clients' apps on the same subscription.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts, you know, making more economic sense maybe. And it was cool. I was worried about that as well. I was like, well, so we're like, do we need another subscription for our staging app? Like, we, you know, and they're like, no, it's just like this is your total container number.
That is awesome.
This weekend, I played a little bit with a microservices idea, and I don't know, at the risk of maybe the FBI coming down on me.
I'm stoked.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. But
anyway, hold up. Before you say that, did you read the recent WikiLeaks article?
No.
Where the new ruling's coming out, where now ISPs need to deliver the people who are, copyright infringing.
Oh,
and,
really?
And they have the right to seek punitive damages.
Well, yeah. So that's interesting. Okay,
now you can go on and tell the audience what
I worked on. Does. So, this was purely educational, right? I'm not actually using the app. Like I tested that it theoretically works.
It's a research project.
Yeah, totally.
That's all my neighbor's doing. Yeah, I take my Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah. So that's the awesome part of this, right? Is that since it is a microservice, you can move the torrent piece of it off if you need to.
What's the app? Right. What's the service? Yeah.
I actually wrote it in Rails a long time ago, but with the hackathon, I decided to rewrite it and see how fast I could do it in Meteor. Yeah, exactly. And I tried once before and it worked okay, but I just kind of trashed that version. But this one, well, it actually goes out. One of the microservices goes out to the EZTV API and gets all the scrapes all the information off their API and stores it in a Mongo database. And then
for TV shows and movies and stuff.
Yeah, just TV shows. And then I've got another microservice that goes out and scrapes and stores all the movie information because they're slightly different and different APIs and that kind of thing. I've got another a microservice that sits there and scans the network for Apple TVs. I've got yet another microservice that handles the torrenting part and it uses PureFlix. And then I've got one app that brings it all together in a UI. Like you can tell it like, oh, hey, I want to use this Apple TV. And then there's a play button and you can drill down and find a TV show or a movie, hit play, and it'll go out and fire off a torrent stream using PureFlix, right? So you get like, it's a sequential download of the movie rather than just any old piece. And so you can do kind of the Netflix streaming. And then like it takes that URL and then fires off a call to the other microservice and says, hey, tell the Apple TV to start playing this. And so you get like this Netflix-like stream just going real time.
That seems amazing.
Yeah.
It's like popcorn time.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Cease and desist is in the mail right now.
Yeah, sorry. The NSA was listening to this.
Yeah. The problem with Popcorn Time is they don't support the Apple TV. So like I built my original one prior to Popcorn Time and it actually like you drop files into a folder so you'd have to torrent them yourself or whatever. But you know, I really didn't do it that often. I would torrent legal videos. It was kind of interesting to build this whole microservice architecture because I don't have to worry about like one of the problems was if you were watching something and the app crashed, like the Rails app would actually crash. You get C++ errors. Mm-hmm. But if that piece crashes, like your whole app doesn't go down. It's just that little piece that isn't working. And so like by splitting it out, you get this awesome stability and really scalability, right? Because I can, like the piece that's driving a lot of traffic, I can scale that up if I needed to and deal with that with more horizontal servers. So that's getting kind of interesting too.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking to that, like one of the, we were, you know, struggling with memory leaks and it was really nice to have people segmented on different containers. Cause then, you know, if one of them just like goes to spikes and it's not affecting your entire user base, which isn't something that was happening for us on our old, you know, stack. If there was like a spike, like everybody would get lagged. Because you know, you can have multiple cores, but they're still like in the same, you know, architecture. Whereas here, like the containers, what it does is if one of them spikes too long, it'll spin off a new one and move them to a new container as well.
Oh, that's interesting. So
it handles automatically like degradation. Memory degradation in that way as well on Galaxy. So for us, it's been very beneficial as we, you know, handled our memory issues. So I think that's a nice protection to have, like especially if you're, you know, building really fast and you don't have time to really optimize properly. Like you can you can count on Galaxy to, you know, at least make sure that it's not impacting all your users.
Yeah. So I've been using Spiderable has been really terrible for Crater. It actually caused a lot of instability. And I've got a similar strategy, like Docker. I used pre-render and Docker and deployed that. And Docker is just, it's not as smart, obviously. I mean, that sounds pretty awesome. Like when the box consumes too much CPU or memory, it'll just restart the pre-render process. And then, you know, everything still kind of works, which is handy for sure. But that sounds way better.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, honestly. Ben, you were saying earlier, you seem pretty happy. Like, really? Like, in terms of all these, like, the key core features that you want, like, in terms of a server stack, like, a lot of it is there. And it's a pretty elegant solution to a lot of these problems that, that you get, you know, running multiple app processes. There's a few things I'd like to see. One of them is, like, a better dashboard. I was saying it's kind of helpful, but it's not that helpful. It's only in real time. Like, you can't go backwards in time.
Yeah.
We're using Kadira as well. And I feel like Kadira is nice, but it's not, like, I would expect, like, an out-of-the-box experience from Galaxy in terms of having something similar to Kadira, you know, at that price point, and just not have to tie into a third service, third-party service there. Because Kadira has been really helpful for us in finding out, you know, where memory leaks are coming from and stuff. And it's just...
Yeah.
Seems, but it's another DDP connection. It's another, like, I feel like it's not the optimal way to be doing that. Like, it's not actually... Kadira doesn't actually hook into your container. It's you're passing it data, you know,
right.
That's a lot of, you know, that could be pretty intensive. So I feel like if it was happening like at the server level, as opposed to like on the third service, that would be better.
Maybe. I mean, but I don't think you could get all the stats that Kadira is giving at the server level. I would agree with that.
No, but I think some of it, like, it'd be nice to have. Like, you think that, like, for example, Galaxy could, for example, tell you how many, you know, observers are open and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. My sense from talking to them we mainly interface with the guys who were formerly Percolate, who are really amazing. My sense from talking to them was that, you know, that kind of stuff is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
I think that'd be, like, some interesting, because you have no more control, right? You can't, like, SSH in and, like, poke around and see what's going on. For me, like, once you give up control, that's fine, but you want to have as many metrics as possible so you
right.
can still stay informed. So I think for, you know, people who are pretty good at, like, sysadmin and stuff, like, that's a little bit of a handcuff type of move. Like, it's amazing because you don't have to handle it, but at the same time, if you want to handle it, you can't.
I wonder if Arinoda and MDG could, like, get a relationship going.
Well, they should just straight up buy Kadira.
Yeah, but if they can't, like, you can, like, give Kadira, like, a special hook into their system.
You could, but
it's not so much like a separate entity.
But I think it's better for the media community if they just bought him, because then like, he'd
stop talking playing. A whole nother level, though.
Maybe he'd stop playing with GraphQL and we could keep him all to ourselves.
Yeah, he's been doing other projects right now.
Like, yeah.
Come back.
Yes.
I think it's interesting how he's built his own little empire around him here.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, well, and, you know, it's smart for him too, right? Because now he's got Kadira and he's, like, gathering these stats, and, like, hooking into GraphQL apps is another way for him to grow his business. And makes sense to me.
Yeah. So
I think he's doing the right thing. I want MDG to lock him up so that,
you know. Yeah. Like Sean mentioned it, like that kind of stuff, that's what you want from Galaxy. They said that it's coming down. And so Noda needs to start thinking about where his business is going, you know, and that means that we're going to lose him pretty much.
Potentially. You can't, like, the pub sub and the method tabs, like, I think it would take MDG a while to get something like that in and kind of going,
which are along. Super helpful.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like that's like, I come in here and I look and I say, oh, you know, Crater is sitting at like 720 megs used and like, I don't know, what's CPU, like 20%, you know, like that's not why I come into Kadira to look at that crap. Like, it tells me we're at like 173 connected sessions. That's interesting. maybe on the dashboard. But in reality, I come in here when I want to see like why the hell is the server slow and how can I make it faster?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't like MDG. I think it would take them a while to get there.
Arnota's been working on Kadira for like 2 years, you know, like,
yeah,
there's some definite progress that's been there. I mean, and Kadira local has been pretty cool.
Kadira debug.
Yeah, you can hook it to your development environment. That's been pretty good for us too.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what? MDG should just do like Kadira Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah,
just, like, bring it in.
Announce that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Agreed. They should just roll that in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think
an interesting thing to note too is that we've seen a pretty good comparison in terms of the metrics that are coming from the server to and Kadira. Before it wasn't that clear because we had Kadira was reporting the number of sessions wrong on our old stack because they were all coming from the same IP and, you know, et cetera. When you look at the memory in Galaxy and the memory in Kadira in real time, they're pretty close as well as the number of sessions. So it's kind of, that's pretty validating, I guess, for Kadira.
Mm-hmm.
From my point of view, saying, you know, we've got these like server side metrics that are coming out of Galaxy, and they, you know, correspond pretty well with, you know, give or take 5% or whatever to Kadira, but they're close enough that, you know, you can trust Kadira as well. So that's interesting.
One concern that I saw in Reddit in particular was people were worried, like, even though you're buying into Galaxy and you get this SLA, you know, how do you easily like define where that line is between what is covered under a developer's subscription and like what's covered under your Galaxy subscription? Have you talked to them about a developer's subscription at all and that kind of stuff? And, you know, have you?
Our long story is that we were part of, you know, the initial group that was in Galaxy. So they were really just super helpful. We'll do whatever it takes to get you going well. Which was perfect. And then anything that relates to Galaxy, they've been super helpful with. And then in terms of things that they started identifying as maybe were potential problems with our app structure, they were helpful up to a point. And then after a while, they were like, well, maybe you should get a developer subscription. And, you know, well, you know, which is, of course, that's their, I'm totally perfect. That's how I would expect them to do it.
We helped you for a little bit, but now you got to give it to you how it is, you know. You don't want us to stop, do you? You don't want us to stop, do you?
To me, like, it just can't scale that they can answer everybody's questions. Like,
yeah, I totally agree.
Like, it's normal that they would go that route. But so then we looked at back and forth with them of what that would look like and stuff. And finally, we just decided to not get it. I guess part of it is, pretty expensive, which is, you know, one thing. You know, you're getting top tier service, but for us it was also like, yeah, we could probably just figure it out on our own as well. What we need.
How much is it again? I forgot.
It's like the same price as the hosting type of thing.
Okay.
Ballpark.
Yeah, I had heard like $2,000 for a day of help, but you have to get it on a yearly subscription.
Yeah, it's more basis. Than this.
Is it? Okay.
It's like $5,000 for a day of help.
Oh.
But you also need to have you have to pay for the subscription, and then it's $5,000 for a day of help on top of that.
Hmm.
And the subscription is like, you can write us emails and we'll answer you.
Right.
Which is, you know, about whatever it is you want. Which is, you know, it seems really open-ended, but at the same time, like, how far are they going to go with, like, you know, could you say, look at this piece of code, how would you optimize it? I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess, I mean, that's not bad. If it's like $5,000 for a year for a company, that's not too bad.
Well, no, you misheard me. It's
$5,000 a day
per month, and then $5,000 for the day on top of that.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
Let's say it's something like $1,000 a month of hosting. You'd have to also pay $1,000 for the, you know, developer support. And then if you want them to like dig into your code base and help you, that's another $5,000.
Yeah. That's really interesting. So
it's steep, but I mean,
hey, you know, I'm okay with it, right? Like, as a freelancer,
yeah, exactly. We're all developers.
That's a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah, exactly. We know what our time is worth. I think they.
I don't know. You use them one day a month for like every month for a year, and you're like getting close to another teammate.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. Like for me,
like you just got him for 1 day a month.
I'm in Canada, so developers are even cheaper.
I was just going to ask you if you're a Canadian.
Yeah, I am. Well, okay, Grow is Toronto based, no?
Yeah.
But you know, you got the about and everything.
Yeah, I have it.
I got it.
I'm actually in French speaking Canada as well. So.
Oh, Quebec?
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, my wife is from Canada, so.
Oh, amazing.
And I'm very keen. I love Canada. Why am I in Chicago?
We got some good things going on.
We do, man.
Yeah, I don't know why you're in Chicago, Ben.
Why are you in Ohio?
I blame my parents for that.
Yeah. At some point, you're a grown-up and you're allowed to move out.
Yeah, well, you know, then there's custody issues with my son, so I stay here.
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly, and that was our rationale. It was like, well, maybe we can just hire somebody in full-time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's a tough call, right? Because chances are you're hiring someone with less experience and, you know.
Yeah. But who can devote a lot more hours.
Yeah.
Yep. You know.
They can learn. Maybe they can learn it, right?
Yeah. I mean, the guys from Percolate are definitely super knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Neil Zolton and Tom, we interfaced with them pretty well.
Yeah. You're getting top support there.
Yeah. And, you know, we also interfaced with somebody on their engineering team based in Ottawa, actually. They're also very, you know, the media
distributed.
Yeah. But,
nice.
And then you look up the people and you're like, okay, these people have worked on like really core pieces of Meteor, mm-hmm. you know, so mm-hmm. like, well, it's expensive, but you've got the people who built the stuff. So,
yeah. So like wrapping up. I'm wondering, have they shared with you like what version 2 looks like coming out with Galaxy?
Nope. and that's not even like the NDA we have stopping me. They just haven't.
I was just going to say that no looked like a yes to me.
So, you know, my thoughts are version 2, like maybe we call it version 2. We'll call it like more consumer friendly or DevSumer friendly? I don't know. Something like that, right? Because it's going to, I think you'll see a lower bar for entry, lower cost for entry.
Mm. Did they say that they were doing that?
Yeah. They've definitely said that they're going to move the free hosting over to be Galaxy-based.
Yeah, I read that. Mm-hmm.
And then they also said that they're working on lower price plans to lower that barrier to entry. Because I think, you know, you look at Heroku and all that kind of stuff, like, They get that you get people in the door at $7 a month or $15 a month, and then like their business takes off, and you know all of a sudden they're paying you thousands of dollars a month, and
that's where you grow. It's painful. So
yeah,
why don't we just get them when they're entering and you know? Mm.
Well, I mean that's the rationale between a lot of businesses.
Yeah,
get people in the door. I think you know that's what their goal was with the free, you know, deployment. Infrastructure since the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think people will want that. I mean, like I look at what we did and we had to like custom deploy and find out our own way to bundle Meteor and, you know, get our own versions of Node updated. And like all of that is just a lot of work. And in the reality, like I think as we move forward in just in the web in general, people want less and less of that. Like you don't want to like handle all that server stuff.
Yeah. Less orchestration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More product building.
Yeah. About 2 months ago, I went back and forth asking myself, do I really want to learn Docker?
Yeah.
And I ultimately came out and said, no, I don't. Josh went the other way.
Yes, I did.
But that was my rationale. Like, I don't know. I have certain things I want to accomplish. I want to build cool things. And I could just get someone else to do the Docker thing for me.
Well, and even from a consumer space.
I can get Josh to do it.
I mean, you look at something like Squarespace, and that's the whole rationale there as well. You know, even from a consumer perspective, like people don't want to have hosting and they don't want to have, you know, WordPress seemed so great back in the day. And now it's like, well, people are just going to a Squarespace because it's a little bit more expensive, but they don't have to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the web in general is going in that direction, honestly. And I mean, it's the same thing with Compose. It's the same thing with all these other, you know,
platform as a service.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to say thank you, Sean, for coming on the show and sharing your Galaxy experience with us. I think all the listeners will be super interested to hear this, even if they can't quite afford it yet. So that was awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure. I was really glad to talk to you guys. I think it's definitely an interesting time for Meteor these last couple months. So looking forward to seeing what else is coming. For us, it's been a ride just, following. You're developing your product, but you're also updating Meteor with every release. And it's like, I'm pretty proud to say that we're at 1.2.
That's pretty awesome.
I guess it is.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at GitHub and they're still on like Rails 2.3 or something like that. They're like way behind. All right. So, thoughts of the week? You got a picks, Ruben? Yeah.
Picks.
Yeah.
You gotta skip. You gotta skip me. All right. I was even prepared.
Oh man.
I'll go with the Sirius Black Harry Potter wand replica that I have here. Big nerd, I guess.
I thought that was a police stick right there.
No. Well, here. So I've got a second one too. This is like, I'm a dork.
You got a second wand?
Yes, I do. I have two wands.
I haven't even
perfect with Classcraft.
I haven't seen like past the first Harry Potter.
Yeah. Well, that's your loss. We went to last August.
Shame. Think of the cultural heritage that you're leaving to your children.
Yes. Yeah. We went to Harry Potter World there at in Orlando.
Oh yeah.
And that was a pretty awesome experience. But that does look cool. We got to have fun. So like we've got like six or eight wands in the house, and we went and took pictures this past weekend, and the lady told us to bring the wands, and the kids had like wand fights, and the sun was like setting behind them. So you just see this silhouette of wand fights. So it's kind of cool.
You want to bring that into like Photoshop and throw on lightning and stuff?
Oh, heck yeah. I'll have to do that once I get the pictures.
Oh, that'd be awesome. How many boys do you have? You have one boy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I have more than one boy. I would never like give those wands to those guys, man. There is most definitely someone that's going to get an eye poked out.
Yes, yeah. Well, to be fair, they're like 10, 11, and 6, right? So,
well, my girls, I would give the wands to my girls. But it's like, it is unreal how crazy boys are.
Yep. Gosh.
Anywho.
I have an 18-year-old stepdaughter, and she was really into Harry Potter. And so we did a Harry Potter birthday party for her. And we had it all. We had a potions class, which was actually a bar.
Nice.
We had a door, which was bricks and, platform 9.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
We had the whole thing. We had the Honey Dukes with like all kinds of Harry Potter themed candy.
That's awesome.
You can't get out of Harry Potter once you've started. Maybe you should stay away from it, actually, Ben.
Yeah, don't start, Ben. Don't start. Right. What's your pick, Ben?
I had a really cool one, and then I totally forgot. So I'm just going to go with a generic one. So like having lots of kids, I found that I really love playing against sports. That is awesome. So I guess that's my generic pick for the day. Played against sports. It's an oldie but goodie. Hey, do you guys remember Funko Land from back in the day?
Yeah, I remember that.
Funko Land?
Yeah.
You remember it? Yeah. Where'd they go?
I don't know.
That just popped in my head. I always like, there was one next to each other like when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So that's why it just popped in my head. That place was awesome.
Weird.
So many things have changed, unfortunately.
Yeah, my knees would get so busted up after going to Funko Land, being in those tunnels all day.
Yeah.
Anyway, Funko Land's my pick now. Where'd you guys go? You guys are disappointing me.
All right.
You know what my pick is? I found out this week why they release video games on Tuesdays. And I was really surprised. The reason is back in 1991 when Sonic the Hedgehog 2 came out, before that, all like video games and DVD and videos were released whenever. But the guys at Sega decided they wanted to do a global release, everybody on the same day across the world. It was the first time ever they did that for video games. And they were going to do it on Friday, but finally they decided they wanted to do it on a Tuesday because it was Sonic Tuesday for Sonic 2. And so that horrible pun has been the origin of like why all TV shows and movies and video games get released on Tuesdays.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. That's awesome. That's awesome. that is so funny because my wife is an author and like she hates Tuesdays because that's new release day and like all the new books get bumped up and you know her ranks get bumped down. So
it all comes from Sonic.
I had no idea.
My 3-year-old has recently discovered Sonic the Hedgehog on Netflix and loves it. And it's like the show's from the 80s. And now he says that his name
I used to watch that show.
His name is not Caleb anymore. His name is Sonic Caleb.
Amazing.
My 3-year-old. Maybe that's why he runs Sonic Caleb. Oh my gosh. I swear he's gonna break one of our sliding door windows.
Nice.
I'm not gonna look forward to it.
All right, guys. Well, I gotta jet, but I really appreciate you being on the show, Sean.
Thanks. Yes. And we'll stay connected on Twitter. Hopefully in the next year, we have projects of making a dev blog, so maybe we can share a bit of our findings.
Nice.
Cool. Till next time, guys.
Thanks. Yep. Bye. Thanks for having me.
Bye.
This podcast has been a Meteor Club production. You can find out more information about Meteor Club at meteorjs.club. It's pretty easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. Again, that's meteorjs.club.